You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air, all across the Civic Media Radio Network. Jane's off today, as is Greg. They're extending their July 4th holiday. I'm guest hosting along with Angela Lang. I'm delighted to have you listening to us today. The phone number to call if you want to join the conversation is 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. It was a great guest we just had, Angela, Professor Zoltan Gross. And we had a comment from one of our texters. Tony says, bring those people in. Zoltan was talking about how do you organize. Bring those people in helps build relationships and form connections. Harder to label the other side as universally bad if you can put a real face to them. We do need to engage in conversation, and that's one of the things we do here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, I'm delighted to bring our next guest on, someone I've been following for a long time. I had the honor of speaking with him and I think reviewing his book when I was editing the Progressive magazine in another lifetime. His name is Luis Rodriguez. He is a poet, a novelist, an essayist, an activist. He's written 16 books, including his terrific memoir, Always Running, La Vida Loca, Gang Days in L.A., and he's got a follow-up memoir that I got to get my hands on. It's called It Calls You Back, An Odyssey Through Love, Addiction, Revolutions, and Healing. Luis Rodriguez served as the Poet Laureate of L.A. from 2014 to 2016. His poetry is great. You can get one of his books, Borrowed Bones, which was his latest, I think. And he's the founding editor of Tia Chucha Press. And along with his wife, he established Tia Chucha's Centro Cultural and Bookstore in the San Bernardino Valley. On top of all that, he ran for governor a couple times in California, endorsed by the Green Party. Luis Rodriguez, welcome to Matt and Air on Air.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Well, it's great to hear your voice. Long time, my friend.
Been a while.
Yes, yeah. It has. And you're still at it, and I'm still at it, and Angela's still at it, so there you go.
There you go.
So when this crackdown in Los Angeles began, with Trump and ICE, you were one of the first people I thought of to talk to if I ever got the occasion to do it. And so I'm thrilled you're here. Tell us what it's been like the last few months there with this crackdown.
Well, as you know, it's been more than a month now. And the worst part of it wasn't so much the so-called riots. There really was no riots here. There was a few incidences. There was people that had burned, I think, five Waymos and some graffiti on walls and a few things that happened. The majority of the protests, and I've been to a number of them, have been peaceful and creative. There've been music and dance. There've been speeches. There've been poetry. It's not covered by the media. Most of the people that are protesting are not the so-called undocumented. They're U.S. citizens who don't want to see fascism in this country. Don't want to see this Gestapo-type kidnapping with mass people coming in and kidnapping people. And now, of course, the whole country understands it, but LA got hit hard. For some maddening reason, they brought in the National Guard and the Marines. Totally uncalled for. Most of those guys have been sitting around millions of dollars to keep them here. There's nothing they're doing. The Marines only arrested one guy, and that's not even their job. You know, it's not even a job Marine to support police. The law enforcement here, I'm very pissed off at the LAPD, but if there was really big trouble, they could handle it. You know, the problem is that when they go after the protesters, they treat them really badly. They're going after people who are just walking away. You know, they're hitting them from horses. They're the ones using the foam bullets. I had a friend of mine who was out there peacefully protesting, had turned around, and he got hit with a foam bullet in his leg and got really bad. He had to be hospitalized. Those foam bullets hurt, and they're really not right to use. I guess it's better than bullets, but it's still not good, especially when you're not doing nothing, when you're walking away. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I guess everybody understands that if somebody goes out there and starts trying to hurt people, but that's not really what's happening. So anyway, I just wanted to report that the people here are very strong, a lot of unity. And you know, it started with a lot of the Chicanos and Salvadorians and Guatemalans and, you know, of course, Mexicans who are citizens getting out there. But now we have, of course, the Black community has stepped up. We have the Asian community. We have other members of other communities being part of these protests. So I think this is an example of what we need to do around the country. If you're going to stop the fascists in the government, you have to protest and keep protesting. But you have to do a lot of what I call strategically creative things. There's a lot more that we can do to fight back.
You know, you mentioned the media, Luis Rodriguez, and they just couldn't get enough of those three or five cars that were on fire. Yep. That was all I saw for like 72 hours, practically. You didn't get to see the nonviolent protests. You didn't get to hear from the speakers. You didn't get to listen to the poetry. All you saw were these fire, right. These cars burning.
That's exactly what the media is doing. This is the legacy media. We're talking about the media that is supposed to not be the Trump media. But, you know, they play into the Trump, I say the Trump media, the right-wing, you know, media that they created. But the legacy media is also helping keep putting out that message that L.A. is unstable and chaotic. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's not. And then I even heard the House Representative Mike Johnson say, well, L.A. had a riot. We can't allow any riots, so we're going to bring in the National Guard so there wouldn't be any rioting, which was, you know, over 30 years ago. And the city has been building and organizing, and people have been out there doing a lot of things. There's amazing communities in L.A. that came alive through community. And nobody wants to talk about that. They want to talk about the one time that there was an actual real riot in the city. And a lot of places got burned. A lot of people got killed. That is something that happened a long time ago. And there's been a lot of rebuilding and a lot of organizing since then.
We're speaking with Luis Rodriguez, who's a poet, novelist, essayist, activist in L.A., runs a cultural center and bookstore there and a little press. What is the level of fear, Luis, in the immigrant community in L.A. right now?
Well, we're telling them don't go out if they can't. We got teams of people, I say we, this is the community, going and getting groceries for them. Making sure that they don't have to step outside. Many of them are brave. They're out there with the food stables they have. They're still peddling food. They're still organizing. Some of them have left their food stuck carts there just to get away. But things have become pretty, like me and my wife walk around the neighborhood here, and we're in the second largest Mexican Central American community in the U.S. after the East L.A. area. It's all raza, as they say. It's all Mexican Central American with a significant number of blacks, but we walk around and nobody's in the street. This is a very lively mm-hmm. neighborhood. People are just not going out. Now, the citizens, and I say the Chicanos and the others who have been out there, we're taking on the protests. They're still arresting people. They're arresting people who are just filming. You know, they're detaining people. They arrested a good, one of my son's friends is a Native American guy who works in the same job that he works at, and they arrested him and held him in the parking lot of his job. Held him because he thought he was Mexican. I also talked to a really good friend of ours who grew up in this country. He's undocumented. He's Chicano. He speaks great English. He's worked hard. He went to school, got graduate degrees. He's himself deporting himself with his family and his two kids to Guanajuato, Mexico. And the issue is that his wife is Navajo, Mexican, and white. She's a U.S. citizen. His kids are born here, but they're going to go to Mexico. And they're going to go making that decision that staying here is not worth it. He's more concerned that he gets stopped because people get stopped everywhere. And he's going to be deported taken to Alligator Auschwitz, you know, in Florida. You know, in other words, what they want to do is detain him because it's a private industry that controls these places. It's big money. So they're not just deporting them. They're actually detaining as many as they can. And sometimes you don't hear from them for days or even longer. So he says, I don't want to do that. I'm going to self-deport. It's a shame. He's a great contributing member of this community. In fact, the biggest lie that the government said is that these are all criminals and, you know, cartel people. These are all hardworking people. The people they're detaining are the ones that are actually doing the work, cleaning the streets, providing for families, and the law-abiding people. You know what I'm saying? They're the ones that are paying their taxes, even if they don't get benefits from them. Some of them have been here 20, 30 years, and they're being deported. There is no more legal way to get citizenship. You go for amnesty, and they're getting you in court. You know, you try to get legal papers. That's what he was trying to do. And then they told him, you know, the average wait for a legal process for Mexicans is 20 years. If you're Filipino, it's 27 years. You know, people think this is a, there's a big line that people can just do everything legally. It doesn't really exist. And so he says, I'm not going to wait 20 years. I'm going to go back to Mexico and take his American U.S. family back there with him.
Well, it sounds like a rational decision, though, because it's so risky right now. And you're right. I mean, there's no way to, you know, to become a citizen. If you go to your appointment, you might get dragged away to a prison anyway, even if you're just trying to follow the rules and finish your paperwork.
Exactly. There's no legal way to go anymore. It's all been thrown out the window. So this is, I think, what I call the fascist regime. And the regime is fascist because fascism has a history. But, you know, my understanding is that even the real fascists, Mussolini and Hitler, they modeled what they did off the United States. They looked at the way the slave population was being held before the Civil War. And then after the Civil War, they saw Jim Crow and the black codes, and they saw the lynchings, and they saw segregation. They were modeling what they did against the Jews from looking at the U.S. So we've had whatever we want to call it in this country since the beginning, a fascism, layered America, you know what I mean, more than one America. And we've had it for a long time. And I think even apartheid South Africa and even Israeli apartheid, they look at the U.S. as models of how to establish those kind of governments. So we're just doing what I think it's in our history. But we've also had a history of fighting back, right, of organizing, of taking on these things. And we want a lot of things. It's just now we're in a situation where it's all being pushed back, but where people are not, they're stepping up tremendously.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about that after the break. We just have a couple minutes break to go. I'm speaking with Luis Rodriguez, who is a novelist, a poet, an activist in Los Angeles. His first memoir, Always Running, was one of the best memoirs I've ever read. You mentioned the fascism. You mentioned Laura Loomer, second person today to mention Laura Loomer. I'm going to give her a complete quote here. Alligator lives matter, she posted. Alligator lives matter. The good news is, she said, alligators are guaranteed at least 65 million meals if we get started now. That's the sadism. That's the fascism that Luis Rodriguez
and you know,
is
that's the number
about
of Latinos there is in the U.S.
Right.
She's talking about every Latino.
Yeah, and she agrees with you. She added there are 65 million illegal aliens in the United States. She thinks every Latino is illegal. That's this Trump regime. We'll be right back here on Matt and Air on Air. We'll be taking your calls and your texts, and we'll be continuing this conversation with Luis Rodriguez on how to resist what we're looking at right now.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. I'm Matt Rothschild, subbing in here for Jane, and Angela Lang is co-hosting with me, subbing in for Greg, I guess you could say. We're delighted you're listening to us all across the Civic Media Radio Network. We have a tremendous guest who is staying with us for the next several minutes. His name is Luis Rodriguez. He's a poet, novelist, essayist, and activist in L.A., author of a tremendous memoir, Always Running, La Vida Loca, Gang Days in L.A. He's got other books out there, poetry and memoir and essays. He is a cultural activist, too. He established Tia Chucha's Centro Cultural and Bookstore in the San Fernando Valley, and he has a press of his own, Tia Chucha Press. He's done a lot of tremendous work. And I got him on air because I wanted him to give us the perspective right there at the heart of the ICE crackdown in L.A., what it's like. And you said we need to be more strategically creative, Luis, so I wanted you to talk about that and then converse with Angela, who's a tremendous organizer, too. So why don't you start there?
Uh-huh. Well, I've been talking to a lot of young people who've been looking for, me and my wife have been in the active for over 50 years. And so they look at us like kind of like an elder of the revolution, you know. And what do you think? So we've been meeting with some of them and trying to help guide them. These young people got great energy and great imagination. But part of the thing I tell them is the first important thing is to have a vision, what I call bring in the feminine energy, which is imagination. Imagine fully what you want to do, where you want to go. Make sure you give that as much space as you can.
We have a little bit of audio. We're going to try to cut your camera off, or you could cut your own camera off, and that might help get the audio better. I'm going to ask Angela how you respond about the energy that of young people that Luis is talking about.
Listen, I'm going to be 36 next month, and so I like to think I'm holding on to my youth, but I'm not, let's be real. And when I see younger folks, specifically like Gen Z, they are angry. They are upset. They are demanding a just world for them to live in. And it's always interesting. I was glad to hear kind of like the role of like the organizing elder, because I think there's been some times where elder folks, and I have to resist this too, of, you know, we've always done it this way. We can't do these new tactics, but how do we, you know, bring in, incorporate young people? I cannot wait to pass the baton to young folks, and I can just go be on a beach drinking margaritas somewhere and helping out where I can. But, you know, I think, you know, what we're getting at is understanding this intergenerational organizing is actually really effective if folks my age and older are willing to kind of share that space and be seen as kind of like organizing mentors and understanding their leadership and supporting and amplifying their leadership, I think is incredibly important, especially right now.
Yeah, Luis, do you want to chime in here?
Yeah, so I think once, especially with young people, you get the imagination going. They're very good about that. Then you have to do the next thing, which is the implementation. Imagination first, implementation next. And that's where you get into what we call the masculine energy. The feminine energy is principle, it's the constant, but the masculine is, as you all know, energy. And I think masculine is better because I go back to my indigenous roots.
We're just losing you again, Luis, so we're going to, I'm going to have to thank you for being our guest. I'm sorry the audio cracked up at the end. That happens sometimes, but I want to thank you for being on the show today, and thank you for your decades and decades of great work as an activist, as a political activist, as a cultural activist, and as a tremendous writer. You're just an inspirational figure for me. Again, I want to have our listeners go get at least one of your books. The first one that I read was Always Running, La Vida Loca, Gang Days in L.A., and Luis has another memoir called It Calls You Back, An Odyssey Through Love, Addiction, Revolution, and Healing. And his book of poetry, Borrowed Bones, is available to you, too. Luis Rodriguez, thanks so much for being our guest today. And we'll pick this up some other time. It's great to hear your voice.
I think what I would love to kind of like dig into is kind of like this idea of the role of arts and culture. And I think, you know, you, Matt, you're always bringing poems. And I think that's so important. We dabbled into some of these conversations, but like the role of culture and community, you know, through the arts and what that means right now. You know, I've heard folks say, yes, this brand of fascism that we're experiencing right now is maybe new to a lot of folks. But if you look back into poetry or to art of how people were able to build community, I think is something that's really important right now with kind of the mutual aid and how are people doubling down and taking care of themselves. There is a role that arts and culture plays in that as well, too, in my opinion.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm reminded of the poet June Jordan, who used to have a Poetry for the People thing going up on Berkeley. She wrote for the Progressive for many years, essays and poetry. I think a new generation of activists are picking up June Jordan's poetry and getting acquainted with what she said, the energy that brought, the insights that she brought, the intelligence that she brought. And you're right, Angela. The work that Luis Rodriguez does, that other poets and activists and singers and artists do, that hits us in a different way. I mean, that's one of the ways to be strategically creative, as Luis Rodriguez said. And I think we need to open our eyes to that and our ears to that, and it'll make this period we're in much easier to get through. And also will inspire people in a lot of ways that, you know, any conversation or 100 op-eds can't do. The art can reach people in a way that commentary can't. And so we need to uplift the arts. Again, I want to thank Luis Rodriguez for being our guest today on Matinee on Air. And we'll be right back. We will have a little poetry, a little bird song, a little This Shouldn't Be a Thing. In the next half hour, you're listening to Matinee on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air, all across the Civic Media Radio Network. Jane and Greg are off. That's why it's the Matt Rothschild and Angela Lang show today. Thanks for listening, and you can join the conversation at 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Great to have Luis Rodriguez on. Mm-hmm.
And it's a great conversation. We got to have him back. I want to continue learning more. Also, it's like what happened in LA, folks are thinking it's going to move to Chicago or to other places. And so I think it's important to, again, going back to like the arts and culture, to document our resistance in real time, not only for future generations, but I think also to share that information across the country too, of what are some lessons learned from LA in cases does spread to other places. We live in Wisconsin. We know that a lot of policy in our legislature is kind of experimented in Wisconsin and then goes to other places. So how can we kind of continue to build with these organizers in some of these cities and states that are being attacked?
Yeah, and Trump keeps threatening, you know, to bring ICE to Democratic strongholds. So that means, you know, Madison, Milwaukee.
Be on that list.
Yeah. And so we need to be ready for it and learn the lessons they're teaching us in L.A., the folks who are resisting so well and so nonviolently, as Luis Rodriguez put it. And, yeah, I wanted to hear more from him on the importance of cultural resistance, and I was just sad that the audio wasn't good enough for us to get his answer to that. And, you know, I had mentioned June Jordan, so I just want to read a couple stanzas from a famous poem that she wrote, Poem for South African Women. The babies cease alarm as mothers raising arms and heart high as the stars, so far unseen, nevertheless hurl into the universe a moving force, irreversible as light years traveling to the open eye. Who will join this standing up? And the ones who stood without sweet company will sing and sing back into the mountains, and if necessary, even under the sea. We are the ones we've been waiting for. That's the famous line of hers at the end that a lot of people use now, but that's where it comes from.
Yep.
Poem for South African Women, that's June Jordan. No longer with us. She used to teach at Berkeley. She was in Madison. I first met her in Madison Actually, my wife Jean said there's this poet who's speaking at Helen C. White, the English department in Madison, one summer many, many years ago, and she said, you should go see it. I was a young editor at the Progressive at the time. So I went and saw her, and I was just so blown away by her reading that I waited afterwards and bought three of her books of poetry. Okay. And the next day I made a pitch to Irwin Knoll, who was then the editor at the Progressive, that, hey, we got to get this great writer in the Progressive. And so we did. So that was one of the great things that we were able to do, get June Jordan writing in the Progressive magazine. She's still inspiring people today, and she's been gone, I want to say, for, more than a decade anyway. So, yeah, so that's just a sample. I do believe in poetry and art and music and painting to move people in ways that regular conversation doesn't. It just hits a different part of the brain, a different oracle of the heart or something. You know, it's just, it gets people. And Howard Zinn used to teach that too. He used to talk about that all the time. So I wanted us to be able to acknowledge that. I had brought a different poem that I may read or I may not, depending on how I feel here in this next half hour. But since we brought up June Jordan, you know, there we go. Jane does something on this show called This Shouldn't Be a Thing. And so I wanted to honor the work that she and Greg do by just doing a little one, because I researched some idiotic things that happened over the weekend, or odd things. And here was one. This is This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Be sure to lock your door edition, your car door edition, that is. This is from Colorado, from a county just west of Denver, where Golden, Colorado is. Late last week, a bear managed to close itself inside a red SUV in Colorado and demolish the interior of the vehicle before being freed by a sheriff's deputy. The Jefferson County Sheriff's shared body camera footage, which I saw this morning, and you can look it up too, that was recorded by the deputy. So what happened was the owner of the red SUV called the cops, saw that there was a bear in his car. The officer arrives. He gets out a rope, ties it to the handle of the door, and then they go hide and they pull the door open, and the bear comes out. But bear had totally trashed the inside of the red SUV, and the police said, make sure you lock your cars when you're in bear country, and might not be a good idea to keep food in that locked car either. And so I thought that was funny. And so this shouldn't be a thing. There you go, Jane and Greg. I gave a nod to you while you're gone. But I do want to also say there is a black bear seen in Stoughton, or near Stoughton. Mm. And I live about 5 miles from Stoughton. So I thought that I saw the video on Facebook of a bear going through someone's garbage in the Stoughton area here in Southern Dane County. So there's a lot going on. We
get some of that in Milwaukee, too. Like a few years ago, we had what we dubbed the Milwaukee Lion. That was just like roaming around. And, you know, we've had like just different random animals. And it's so funny in like a city like Milwaukee. But like as a city girl, like I know some people, I have some family that live out in the country, and like they don't lock their doors, whether it's their car door or like their house door. And I, as a city woman, could not fathom going anywhere. I also drive a Kia, which, you know, you got to lock everything up. And that's, you know, I don't know. It blew my mind when I learned that some folks just like don't lock their house or like their car. Like in Milwaukee, my Kia would be stolen in 0.5 seconds.
Yeah, I know people who've gotten their car stolen, their bike stolen real fast if it's not locked. And you mentioned wildlife in urban areas. I was 10 days ago visiting a brother of mine in Evanston, Illinois, about 3 blocks from Central Avenue in Evanston. That's downtown Evanston. And a coyote walked right down their street. And it was it was funny, though, because three neighborhood kids, they couldn't have been more than 8, 10, and 11. They just they thought it was the greatest thing ever and started to run down the sidewalk, follow the coyote, see if they could track it down again. And the coyote,
they probably were going to try and catch it. I don't know. Yeah.
Coyote didn't seem to be that scared. That's the thing about coyotes. They just kind of look at you. Yeah. I mean, I saw one in the Madison Arboretum once. I was bird watching down there, and there was a coyote about 30 yards away. Looked at me, looked back, and just kind of sauntered away. Wasn't in any hurry. That's how I guess coyotes are a thing now almost everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, what people say too is like, you gotta just be careful of like your pets, right? Like if you have indoor, outdoor cats, for example, right? Like if there's a coyote around, you might want to be careful. But yeah, it's so interesting in kind of like urban areas and in cities to see some of these animals. And then they kind of just turn into memes, and they kind of turn into this moment where like folks are talking about it. I remember, and I'm sure you remember, I don't remember the name, but like a couple summers ago, there was like this beautiful bird that like came to Milwaukee that everybody was like obsessed with, this like beautiful bird, and they would go like seek out this bird, and these are people that were like not bird watchers or anything. And I kind of like those wholesome moments that kind of break up city life, where like the community can just come together over something very silly, very wholesome. A couple summers ago, we had these like, I don't know, life-size statues of like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and they would make their rounds, and they would go to different local businesses, and you know, it was a fun time. And I think about, you know, some of these animals and how they can, you know, be a little bit of a reprieve from what we're seeing on a day-to-day basis, and seeing something kind of fun and different and wholesome for once in our city.
And I know in rural areas in Wisconsin, people have started to see mountain lions. For a while there, the DNR was saying, no, there are no mountain lions in Wisconsin. And then people's trail cams start picking up the mountain lions, and there's no denying that there are mountain lions. And they can cover a lot of territory, too. I mean, I'd love to see a mountain lion. I'd like to see it if I'm in my car and the car's locked.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I see it from a distance. Cool. I see you. I'm safe. You. So are you.
Yeah, I don't want to see one when I'm walking on a trail with my binoculars.
Yeah, very different from bird watching.
Yeah, no, it's a little dicier. We were at Rocky Mountain National Park once, my wife and I, and on a trail where there were signs, beware of mountain lions, all over the place, and I smelled cat urine. And so that was a suggestion that they might be a little too close. So we were making a lot of noise. We survived it. We didn't see them.
There you go.
But I think they saw us. That's the thing when you're out
there.
So if you're listening and you've seen a strange, unusual wildlife sighting, give us a holler, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. When I was on Friday, I was on for Maggie. I had a caller or a texter saying, why don't you play the song of the Eastern Wood Peewee, he said. Now, the Eastern Wood Peewee, for those who aren't bird fanatics like me, it's a little flycatcher like the Phoebe. Most people know a lot of people know what a Phoebe is. But anyway, a Phoebe and an Eastern Wood Peewee are very small. Well, they're between a robin size and a goldfinch size, little flycatchers that hang out on the perch of a tree, way out on a twig, go grab a bug and come back and sit back on that same perch. So this guy was from Washington County. I want to honor his request to play the Eastern Wood Peewee. I think it was Tom. Thanks for the suggestion. Here's the Eastern Wood Peewee for you. That's background. That's the Eastern Wood Peewee right there. That two-syllable thing, or stretched-out two-syllable thing. We'll get one more and call it a day. There it is. So Eastern Wood Peewee. I heard one yesterday while I was sitting out on my porch. So they are around. They sing all summer long. That's a two-note, high-pitched Eastern Peewee. Wood Peewee, yeah. They look
very different from the other one that you played where it was, I don't remember what it was, but it was kind of more obnoxious.
Oh, is the screeching door sound. That was the yellow-headed blackbird. That I was supposed to go to Horicon Marsh to see this weekend, but I'm going to go on my birthday, which is coming up in 3 days. I'm going to leave my house at about...
Happy early birthday.
Thank you. 67. Oh, God. But I'm going to leave at about 6 in the morning or 5:30 in the morning and try to see as much of Horicon Marsh as I can in about 2 or 3 hours. I'll come back with new bird songs from Horicon Marsh next time I'm on there after that for sure. But it is... it's been a hobby that's been with me since I was a geeky, fat, odd little kid growing up, and people would want to be out playing baseball, and I wanted to be in the woods with my binoculars. And it started because we were in the kind of a rural part of a suburb of northern Chicago, and one winter we had pheasants in the backyard, ringneck pheasants, like one male and six or seven or eight females, and they're just so beautiful that as a 3 or 4 year old, I just thought it was the most cool thing ever. So that was my origin bird story. And so ever since I've been about 3 or 4, I've been watching birds, and bird watching is hot right now. Amy Tan has a book out about being a bird watcher and drawing pictures of birds. And yeah, so it's now in when it was a, it was not so in when I was doing it, but it's always been fun.
State Rep Darren Madison is a birder too, and he'll go bird watching. He has a couple friends he goes bird watching with. I am putting in a request. I want a podcast episode between you and Rep Madison about birding. I just want 1 hour of just following you two around while you all bird.
Oh, that would be great. I'd love to do it with Darren. You're listening to Matinee on Air. I'm Matt Rothschild. She's Angela Lang, and we'll be right back with you.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, we're back. Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Thanks so much for listening. Jane and Greg are off today. That's why you've been listening to Matt Rothschild and Angela Lang. It's been an honor to be able to be with you. I want to thank Jane and Greg for giving us this opportunity. It's always fun to be able to sit in for them. It's also great listening to their show. I love their show. It's a great mix of politics and then kind of some lighter stuff in this last half hour, which I always enjoy. This Shouldn't Be a Thing is just a great anchor for the program. So I admire what they're doing. I think it's great radio and great conversation, civic dialogue that we try to foster here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And Jane's great at it, and so is Greg. So good luck to them. I hope they've had a nice vacation. Look forward to hearing them tomorrow. I wanted to also thank Dom Lee, who has been producing the show today on the fly. I don't think he knew he was doing it until about 5:30 this morning.
That was partially my fault, or I didn't have it in my calendar. So, we just kind of got on, and Matt and Angela, thank you guys so much for
you made it work.
Yeah, it all worked out in the end, and we got it done, and it was a great show. 100%.
It's a good show. Thank you.
And Dom's terrific. He's been working with me on my Wisconsin Forward podcast, too. This is his first job, fresh out of college. He just jumped straight into the workforce, and he's been climbing the learning curve in record time. So it's great. It's great to have you here at Civic Media.
Yeah. I normally am a producer for John and Gordy, but as of recent, I've been kind of going around other shows, subbing in when needed to. And each time that same question comes up, like, oh man, youngest person, he's just coming out of college. So thank you so much, Matt, for talking about that. I appreciate it.
No, it's fun working with you. Now, we just got through doing some nerdy bird talk. Are you a bird watcher? Are you a nature lover?
I'm a nature lover. I can't say I love birds. I mean, they're cool. Don't get me wrong, but I would say, I like other type of, animals. Specifically the honey badger. I love the honey badger.
Me too.
But yeah, birds, I really like, I like doves. Doves are awesome.
It's funny about doves, because the mourning dove, that's spelled with a U, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. People will hear the mourning dove and they think there's an owl out there because the mourning dove sounds a little bit like an owl. If it's in the middle of the day, I guarantee you it's probably not an owl.
It's probably
a mourning dove because the owls come at night. I heard an owl last night again. I'm sitting on my porch just goofing around online on Facebook as it was getting dark out. And hats off for my wife for insisting we get a screened-in porch at our house because it's great now. And I resisted it forever because I didn't want to spend the money, but it's been well worth it. And I'm out there, it turns dark, and there's a thrush singing. There's this eastern wood pewee singing, and then boom, there's an owl with this booming call. So that was awesome last night. So it was a lot of fun. Dom, I might get you Maybe I should get you one too, Angela. Bird book and a cheap pair of glasses.
Oh,
I always advise people don't spend a lot of money on binoculars, especially your first binoculars. But I'm on my 10th pair, sure. And I won't spend more than a couple $100 on it. You can get ripped off. You know, there are stores that are selling them for thousands of dollars. Just get a cheap pair. And that'll be all you need to.
I feel like as long as they work, yeah.
As long as they work, you can get bit by the bird bug, and it'll be it'll be with you forever. It's a virus you can't.
I don't think I've ever had binoculars, but I have a feeling if I ever did, I would never. I would always just hold on to them. I would always watch everything with them.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even use my own eyes. You know what I mean? I just use the binoculars instead. So
why not? Yeah, right.
Hey, we got Chris Casper, Civic Media Zone, saying we've got a pair of great horned owls that we hear in our backyard quite often. I just love it.
Nice.
All right,
nice.
I said I had another poem. I'm going to read another poem. You know, for art and to reach you, it doesn't have to be political art. It can just be beautiful art, and that will get you out of your funk. We got to get out of our own funks and be active, but it doesn't have to be a political poem. Here's a beautiful July summer poem by one of my favorite poets, W.S. Merwin. It's simply called Summer Sky, and it's real short. July, with sun-filled leaves drifting among the butterflies, I've been coming to this morning light since the day I was born. I saw its childhood as I sat alone in silence by the high window. No one else saw it. No one else would ever recognize it. It is the same child now who watches the clouds change. They appear from out of sight and change as the moment passes through them. That's W.S. Merwin, Summer Sky. Beautiful.
That's good.
Beautiful little poem.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a Wordsworth line, the father is a child of the man. Or no, child is father of the man. And I only wish my days would be filled each by each with natural piety. That's Wordsworth, but it was kind of an echo there in that W.S. Merwin poem. Mm. I do love poetry. I think poetry can really, if it's a nice little condensed, I have a bias for short poems. I know some people write long, long poems, but I love the short, condensed poem like that. I think you can really pack a lot into a short poem, and if it's done perfectly, it can stay with you forever. My dad used to recite a different Wordsworth poem about daffodils, which is an amazing poem too. So I learned a little poetry from him. He did it to show off. He was a bit of a show off. I do it in part to show off, but in part just because I just love poetry, and I think it can bring you to a different place. Angela Lang, thanks so much for co-hosting with me today on Man Air. It's been a real pleasure as always.
Always. Good show. Thanks for always having me.
Oh, I can't wait till we can do it the next time.
Yep.
And Dom, thanks again for producing. I want to thank Shelley Pittman for being our guest, Professor Zoltan Grossman, Luis Rodriguez, the great poet in L.A. Tom Hartman is next, the great Tom Hartman. You learn a lot from Tom Hartman every day, so stay tuned for that.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.